then climbed out the window because she had trapped herself inside the car. She reached back in for the revolver. The gun felt heavier somehow, deadlier. She left the open box of ammunition on the roof of the car. She picked up one bullet at a time and carefully slotted them into the cylinders. "For Julia," she said on the first one. "For Daddy. For Mom. For Lydia." Claire studied the last bullet in the palm of her hand. This one felt heaviest of all. Shiny brass, with a menacing black tip that would flare out once it hit soft tissue. "For Paul," she whispered, her voice sounding hoarse and desperate. The last bullet would be for her husband, who had died a long time ago, back when he was a boy and his father had taken him out to the barn for the first time. Back when he'd told Claire that he'd had a happy childhood. Back when he'd stood in front of the Justice of the Peace and sworn to love and cherish her for the rest of his life. Back when he'd so convincingly held on to her hand as he pretended to die in the alley. No pretending this time. Claire clicked the cylinder into place. She tested the gun, holding the barrel straight out in front of her, curling her finger around the trigger. She practiced pulling back the hammer with her thumb. This was the plan. She was going to pour gasoline around the Fuller house, just the bedrooms, the front porch, and under the bathroom, because she was betting that Paul was keeping Lydia in the garage, and she wanted to stay as far away from her sister as possible. Then she was going to light the gasoline. Then Paul would smell the smoke or hear the flames. He would be terrified, because fire was the only thing that ever really scared him. As soon as he ran out of the house, Claire would be waiting with the gun in her hands, and she would shoot him 5 times, one for each of them. Then she would run into the house and save Lydia. The plan was risky, and most likely crazy. Claire was aware of both of these things. She also knew that she was literally playing with fire. But there was nothing else she could think of that would get Paul out of the house, taken unaware, long enough for her to act. And she knew it had to happen quickly, because she wasn't sure that she could pull the trigger if she gave herself too long to think about it. Claire was not her husband. She could not so casually take another human life, even if that life had been drained of its humanity. She tucked the gun into the front of her jeans. The barrel wasn't long, but the cylinder dug into her hip bone. She moved it to the center, just along the zip, but that was worse. She finally shifted the weapon to the small of her back. The granny panties her mother had bought bunched up around the cylinder. The barrel went down the crack of her ass, which was mildly unpleasant, but none of her pockets were deep enough, and she knew that she would be screwed if Paul saw the gun. She opened the trunk. She unzipped the backpack and searched for the Mylar emergency blanket. The packet the blanket came in was small, but when she unfolded it, she saw it was the size of a large cape. The waterproof matches were on top of the flares, which were all on top of a thick paperback. The complete poems of Percy Bysshe Shelley. As Helen might say, poets weren't the only unacknowledged legislators of the world. Claire wrapped her stash in the foil blanket. She opened the 4 boxes of water. Her shirt was still damp from running through the rain. Still, she doused herself with water. The chill struck her immediately, but she made sure she covered her head, back, and every inch of her shirt sleeves down to the buttoned cuffs. She poured the rest of the water on the legs of her jeans. She grabbed the blanket and the 4-gallon gas can. Gas sloshed around inside the large plastic can as she lugged it through the forest. A permanent mist of rain seemed to be trapped under the tree canopy. She heard a distant rumble of thunder, which seemed appropriate given the task she'd laid out. Claire squinted ahead. The sky was getting darker by the minute, but she could make out a powder-blue Chevy parked behind a row of trees. Claire put down the gas can and blanket. She drew the revolver. She cocked the hammer. She approached the car carefully in case Paul or one of his cronies was inside. Empty. She uncocked the gun. She tucked it into the back of her jeans. Habituation. The gun didn't feel so strange anymore. She pressed her hand to the hood of the car. The engine was cold. Paul had probably been staying at the Fuller house from the moment Claire left. Why would he go anywhere else? He had the sheriff to protect him. She retrieved the blanket and gas can and continued her walk toward the house. The brush was thick. Claire felt a moment of panic where she wondered if she'd gotten off course. But then she saw the green roof of the house. She walked in a crouch. The windows were still boarded up with the weathered plywood. Claire stayed low anyway, because she knew that there was a slit in the den windows that showed the driveway. So it followed that there would be others. The overgrown backyard hadn't had time to absorb the slow, sloppy rain. Claire heard dry grass crackle under her feet. The swing set groaned as a strong wind swept through the open field where the Amityville barn had been. Claire kept clear of the area. She used her feet to press down a patch of tall grass to create a staging area for the blanket and its contents. She studied the back of the house. The plywood board she and Lydia had pried off the kitchen door was leaning up against the side of the house. They had left it on the ground where they'd dropped it. She assumed Paul had neatly leaned up the board beside the door. He had probably straightened up inside the house as well. Or maybe he'd left the silverware strewn across the floor as a sort of alarm so that he would know if someone tried to enter the house. Claire was more worried about getting Paul out of the house than her going in. She bent down to the gas can and took the cap off the flexible spout. She started to the left of the small back porch, off the kitchen, dripping gasoline down the slats of wooden siding that covered the exterior of the house. Claire worked carefully so that the gas got into the seams between the boards. She raised up the can every time she passed a window, soaking the plywood as much as she could without making too much noise. Claire's heart was pounding so loudly when she walked up the front porch steps that she was afraid the noise would give her away. She kept her eyes on the garage. She tried not to think about Paul in there with Lydia. The roll-up metal door was still padlocked from the outside. The hasp was secure. His murder room. Lydia was locked inside his murder room. Claire turned back around. Quietly, she made a half-loop back around the house, double-checking her work underneath the boarded-up windows. By the time she was finished, she'd poured a crescent of gasoline around the left side of the house, covering the front porch, the bedrooms, and the bathroom. Only the kitchen and garage were left untouched. Step one. Complete. Claire returned to the foil blanket. She knelt down. She was sweating, but her hands were so cold she could barely feel her fingers. She said a silent apology to her mother, the librarian, as she ripped apart the Shelley collection. She wadded and rolled together the pages into a long wick. She unscrewed the spout from the gas can. She shoved the wick inside, leaving around 6 inches of exposed paper. Step two. Ready. There were 2 long flares from the backpack. Claire kept both in her hand as she walked to the front of the house. She stood underneath the sewing room. The empty street was behind her. At the gas station, she had read the instructions for lighting the flare. It worked the same way as striking a match. You pulled off the plastic cap and struck the sandpaper side to the top of the flare. Claire pulled off the plastic cap. She looked up at the house. This was the moment. She could stop now. She could go back to her car. She could call the FBI in Washington, D.C., Homeland Security, the Secret Service, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. How many hours would it take for them to get to the house? How many hours would that give Paul alone with her sister? Claire struck the top of the flare. She jumped back because she hadn't anticipated such an immediate blazing plume of fire. Sparks dripped at her feet. The flare made a spurting sound like a faucet turned on full blast. She felt a quiver of panic at what she was doing. She thought there would be more time. But the fire was rapidly eating away the seconds. The gasoline had caught. Reddish-orange flames licked up the side of the house. She dropped the flare. Her heart was in her throat. She had to move quickly. This was happening now. There was no going back. Claire jogged around to the side of the house. She struck the other flare and dropped it underneath the master bedroom. There was a whooshing sound, a puff of hot wind, and the flames roiled along the gas trail up to the plywood boards covering the window. The heat was intense, but Claire was shivering. She ran back to her staging ground and wrapped the Mylar cape around her shoulders. The crinkly material barely covered her upper body. She looked up at the sky. The clouds were moving fast. The rain had gone from a fine mist to big, fat drops. Claire hadn't counted on the rain. She watched the side of the house to make sure the fire was taking. White smoke spiraled high into the air. Orange flames licked out from behind the plywood. Step 3, in progress. Claire grabbed the gas can and walked toward the back porch. She stopped 10 feet away, perfectly in line with the steps. She put down the can. She took out the revolver. She held the gun at her side, barrel pointing toward the ground. She waited. The wind shifted. Smoke blew into her face. The color had changed from white to black. Claire didn't know what that meant. She recalled a television show where the color difference was an important plot point. But then she also recalled an article that said the color of smoke varied depending on what was burning. Was anything burning? Claire couldn't see any more flames. There was only a steady plume of black smoke as she waited for Paul to run screaming from the house. A minute passed. Another. She gripped the revolver in her hand. She swallowed down a cough. The wind shifted back toward the road. Another minute. Another. She listened to the rushing sound of blood in her ears as her heart threatened to beat out of her chest. Nothing. Shit, she whispered. Where was the fire? There wasn't enough rain to wet the grass, let alone snuff out a burning house. Even the emergency road flare was sputtering out. Claire kept her eye on the back door as she shuffled a few feet over to check out the side of the house. Smoke rolled out from underneath the plywood like a coal fire plant. Was the fire inside the walls? The wood siding was old and dry. The wooden studs had been inside the walls for over 60 years. Claire had seen thousands of diagrams of residential walls, the siding on the exterior, the thin wood sheeting for strength, the thick layer of insulation tucked between the wooden studs, the sheetrock. There was at least 6 inches of material between the inside and outside of the house, most of it wood, much of it soaked in gasoline. Why wasn't the fire blazing through the house by now? The insulation. Paul had replaced all the windows. He would have pulled the old sheetrock off the walls and foamed in a fire-retardant insulation because no matter what Claire thought of, Paul was always 6 fucking steps ahead of her. God damn it, she muttered. What now? The gas can. She picked it up. There was still a swill of gasoline inside. The paper wick had sucked most of it into the fibers. This was her one and only backup plan. To light the wick and throw the can on the roof. And then what? Watch that not burn either. The point of directing the fire into a crescent was to send Paul running out the back door. If he heard something on the roof, he could just as easily go out the front or even through the garage door. Or ignore the sound as a fallen tree limb, or maybe not hear it at all because he was too busy doing whatever it was that he was doing with Lydia. Claire put down the gas can. She opened the flip phone. She dialed information and got the home number for Buckminster Fuller. She pressed the key to connect the call. Inside the house, the kitchen phone started ringing. The sound still felt like an ice pick in her ear. She let the muzzle of the gun tap at her leg as she listened to the rings. 1, 2, 3. This time yesterday, Claire was sitting on the back porch like a docile child as she waited for Paul to call her every 20 minutes to tell her whether or not her sister was still alive. Paul answered the phone on the 5th ring. Hello? It's me. She kept her voice quiet. She could see him through the broken kitchen door. His back was to her. There was no smoke in the room, no sign of the fire. He had taken off the red sweatshirt. She could see his shoulder blades stretching against the thin material of his t-shirt. He said, "Why are you calling on this phone?" "Where is Lydia?"
"I'm really getting sick of you asking about your sister."
The wind had shifted back. Smoke burned her eyes. "I saw the unedited videos." Paul didn't answer. He looked up at the ceiling. Could he smell the smoke? "I know, Paul." "What do you think you know?" He tried to stretch the phone cord to look in the hallway. A flash of light caught Claire's eye. A single flame fingered its way down from the soffit over the bathroom. She looked back at Paul. The phone was keeping him tethered inside the kitchen. "I know you're the masked man." Again, he said nothing. Claire watched the finger of flame turn into a hand. The soffit blackened. The wood grain on the siding laced with soot. "I know you have photographs of Johnny Jackson on the USB drive. I know you want your client list so you can keep the business going. Where are you?" Claire's heart thrilled with excitement as she watched the fire trace up the plywood board covering the bathroom window. "Claire." Paul wasn't talking on the phone. He was standing on the porch looking up at the house. Smoke rolled off the roof. He didn't look terrified. He looked stunned. "What did you do?" Claire dropped the phone. She still held the revolver at her side. Paul looked down at her hand. He knew that she had a gun. Now was the time to raise it up. Point the barrel at him. Cock the hammer. She should move quickly. She should widen her stance. She should be ready to pull the trigger before his foot hit the ground. Paul walked down the 3 steps. She remembered him walking down the stairs at home. The way he would smile at her in the morning and tell her how beautiful she was. The way he would kiss her cheek. The way he would leave her notes to find in the medicine cabinet and send her funny texts during the day. He asked, "Did you set the house on fire?" He sounded incredulous and secretly pleased. The exact same way he'd sounded when Claire had called him from the police station to tell him she needed bail money. Claire. She could not move. This was her husband. This was Paul. "Where did you get that?" He was looking down at the gun. Again, he seemed more surprised than concerned.
Claire?
The plan. She couldn't forget the plan. The fire was catching. The revolver was in her hand. She needed to cock the hammer, point it at Paul's face, pull the trigger. Pull the trigger! Pull the trigger!
Lydia's fine.
He was standing so close to her. She could smell his musty sweat. His beard was full. He had taken off the thick glasses. She could see the outline of his body underneath his white t-shirt. She had kissed his body. She had curled her fingers into the hair on his chest. He glanced back at the house.
Looks like it's spreading fast.
You're terrified of fire.
Well, I am when it's close enough to hurt me.
He didn't state the obvious, that he was outside, that it was raining, that he had acres of fields he could run to for safety.
Listen, the fire won't hold off like that for long. Go ahead and give me the USB drive, and I'll leave, and you can go inside and untie Lydia.
He smiled, his sweet, awkward smile that told her everything was taken care of.
You'll see I didn't hurt her, Claire. I kept my promise to you. I always keep my promises to you.
Claire watched her hand go up to touch his cheek. His skin felt cold. His t-shirt was too thin.
He needed a jacket.
She said, I thought. Paul looked into her eyes.
You thought what?
I thought I chose you.
Of course you did.
His hands gently cradled her face.
We chose each other.
Claire kissed him. Really kissed him. Paul moaned. His breath caught when their tongues touched. His hands trembled at her face. She could feel his heart beating.
It was the same as it had always been.
Which was how she knew that it had always been a lie. Claire cocked the hammer. She squeezed the trigger. The explosion shook the air. Blood splattered up her neck. Paul dropped to the ground. He was screaming. The sound was feral, frightening. He clutched at his knee, or what was left of his knee. The hollow-point bullet had disintegrated his kneecap and ripped apart his ankle. White bone and strips of tendon and cartilage dangled down like bloody pieces of frayed string. She told Paul, "That was for me." Claire shoved the gun down the back of her jeans. She grabbed the foil blanket. She started toward the house. Then she stopped. Fire had taken over the left side of the house. Flames were clawing at the kitchen wall. Sparks jumped up at the ceiling. Glass shattered in the intense heat. The telephone had melted. The linoleum was black. Smoke hung like white cotton in the air. Orange and red flames had filled the den as they trudged toward the hallway. Toward the garage.
It was too late.
She couldn't go in. Trying to help Lydia would be madness. She would die. They would both die. Claire took a deep breath and ran into the house. Chapter 23.
I'm in the garage!
Lydia pulled uselessly at her restraints as bright red flames licked at the mouth of the hallway.
Help me!
She had heard gunfire. She had heard a man screaming. Paul, she thought. Please, God, let it be Paul.
I'm here!
Lydia cried. She strained against the chair. She had given up hope until the phone rang, until the gunshot.
Help!
She screamed. Did they know about the fire? Were the police handcuffing Paul when they should be running into the house? He had left the door to the house open. She had a front-row view to the changing nature of the fire. The gentle flicker had turned into white-hot flames that were chewing through the walls. The carpet peeled up. Chunks of plaster melted off the ceiling. Smoke and heat roiled through the narrow corridor. Her hands felt hot. Her knees felt hot. Her face was hot.
Please!
Lydia screamed. The fire was moving so fast. Didn't they know she was in here? Didn't they see the flame shooting through the roof?
I'm in here! She yelled. I'm in the garage!
Lydia pulled uselessly at the restraints. She couldn't die like this. Not after what she had survived. She needed to see Rick one more time. She needed to hold Dee in her arms. She had to tell Claire that she had really forgiven her. She had to tell her mother that she loved her. That Paul had killed Sam. That her father had not taken his life. That he had loved them all so much and...
Please!
She screamed so loudly that she strangled on the word.
Help me!
There was a figure at the end of the hallway.
Here! She yelled. I'm here!
The figure got closer. Closer.
Help!
Lydia cried.
Help me!
Claire. The figure was Claire.
No, no, no!
Lydia panicked. Why was it Claire? Where were the police? What had her sister done?
Lydia.
Claire was running at a crouch, trying to stay below the smoke. A foil blanket was over her head. Fire roiled behind her, brick red and orange flames that lapped up the walls and dug chunks out of the ceiling. Why was it Claire? Where were the firemen? Where were the police? Lydia frantically watched the door, waiting for more people to rush in. Men in heavy fireproof jackets, men with helmets and oxygen, men with axes. There was no one else. Just Claire. Crazy, impetuous, idiotic fucking Claire.
What did you do?
Lydia screamed.
Claire! It's all right, Claire screamed back. I'm going to save you. Jesus Christ!
Lydia could see the fire curling the paint off the walls. Smoke was filling the garage.
Where is everybody?
Claire grabbed the knife off the table. She cut through the plastic ties.
Go!
Lydia pushed her away.
I'm chained to the wall. You have to go!
Claire reached behind the chair. She twisted something. The chain fell away like a belt. For a moment, Lydia was too stunned to move. She was free. After almost 24 hours, she was finally free. Free to burn alive in a fire. Come on! Claire headed toward the open door, but the fire had already consumed their only way out. Flames melted the plastic slats on the wall. The shag carpet curled like a tongue.
No!
Lydia screamed.
God damn it, no!
She couldn't die like this. Not after living through Paul's torture. Not after thinking she was going to get away.
Help me.
Claire ran at the roll-up door. The metal made a clanging sound that rattled Lydia's eardrums. Claire tried to run at the door again, but Lydia grabbed her arm.
What did you do?
She screamed.
We're going to die!
Claire jerked away her arm. She ran to the wooden shelves. She swept the videotapes onto the floor. She wrested the shelves from their brackets.
Claire!
Lydia yelled. Her sister had finally gone insane.
Claire, stop!
Claire grabbed the pry bar off the floor. She swung it like a bat at the wall. The hammer stuck into the sheetrock. She wrenched it out and swung again. Sheetrock. Lydia watched dumbly as Claire took another swing at the wall. Like everything else in the garage, the concrete block wall was for show. The actual garage walls were made of sheetrock and wooden studs, and beyond those studs there would be siding, and beyond that would be freedom. Lydia snatched the pry bar out of Claire's hands. Every muscle in her body screamed as she lifted the 10-pound metal bar over her head. She put her full weight into the swing, bringing it down like a hammer. She swung again and again until the sheetrock was gone and hard pieces of foam chipped out like snow. Lydia took another swing. The foam was melting. The metal bar cut through like butter. Claire yelled, "Use your hands!" They both grabbed handfuls of smoldering foam. Lydia's fingers burned. The foam was returning to its liquid state, releasing pungent chemicals into the air. She started coughing. They were both coughing. The smoke was thick inside the garage. Lydia could barely see what they were doing. The fire was getting closer. Heat blistered at her back. She frantically pulled at the boiling insulation. This wasn't going to work. It was taking too long. "Move!" Lydia backed up as much as she could and ran at the wall. She felt her shoulder crunch against the wood siding. She backed up and ran again, angling her body between the studs so she could get to the outside part of the wall. Lydia backed up to make another run. Claire screamed, "It's not working!" But it was. Lydia felt the boards crack against her weight. She backed up again. Daylight showed through the splintered wood. Lydia ran full bore at the wall. The wall buckled. Something popped in her shoulder. Her arm hung uselessly at her side. She used her foot, kicking with every ounce of her remaining strength until the wooden slats popped off their nails. Smoke funneled toward the fresh air. Lydia turned around to get Claire. "Help me!" Claire's hands were full of videotapes. The fire was so close that she looked luminescent. "We have to get them out!" Lydia grabbed her sister by the collar and pushed her toward the narrow opening. Claire couldn't fit through the gap with the tapes. Lydia slapped them out of her hands. She pushed Claire again. Her feet slipped. Her shoes were melting into the concrete. Lydia made one last push. Claire went flying outside. Lydia was right after her. They both landed hard on the driveway. The sudden fresh air shocked Lydia's system. Her collarbone had cracked against the concrete. She felt like a knife had jammed into her throat. She rolled onto her back. She gasped for air. Videotapes rained down around her. Lydia swatted them away. She hurt so bad. Everything hurt so bad. "Hurry!" Claire was on her knees. She was reaching her hands back into the garage, trying to save the videotapes. One of her shirt sleeves caught on fire. She shook out the flame and kept reaching in. Lydia tried to push herself up, but her left arm wouldn't work. The pain was almost unbearable as she lifted herself with her right hand. She grabbed Claire by the shirt and tried to pull her away. "No!" Claire kept reaching for more tapes. "We have to get them!" She used both hands to gather the tapes the same way she used to gather sand to make castles. "Lydia, please!" Lydia got on her knees beside Claire. She could barely see more than a few inches in front of her. Smoke was furling out the opening. The heat was suffocating. She felt something drop on her head. Lydia thought it was a spark from the fire, but it was rain. "There's just a few more." Claire kept pulling out the tapes. "Get them away from the house!" Lydia used her good hand to toss the videos out into the driveway. There were so many. Her eyes scanned the dates on the labels, and she knew the dates corresponded to missing women, and that the women had families who had no idea why their sisters, their daughters, were gone. Claire fell backward as flames shot out from the garage. Her face was black with soot. The fire had finally engulfed the garage. Lydia grabbed her collar and pulled her away from the house. Claire stumbled as she tried to stand. Her melted shoes fell off her feet. She banged into Lydia. The jolt sent pain straight up into Lydia's shoulder. But it was nothing like the hacking coughs that racked her body. She bent at the waist and let out a stream of black water that tasted like piss and cigarette ash.
Lydia.
Claire rubbed her back. Lydia opened her mouth and let out another foul black stream that made her stomach spasm. Mercifully, there wasn't much more. She wiped her mouth. She stood up. She closed her eyes to fight the dizziness.
Lydia, look at me.
Lydia forced open her eyes. Claire stood with her back to the garage. Fire and smoke raged behind her. But she was looking at Lydia, not the fire. She had her fingers pressed to her mouth. She looked stricken. Lydia could only imagine what her sister was seeing. The bruises, the welts, the electrical burns. Claire said,
"What did he do to you?"
"I'm okay,"
Lydia said, because she had to be.
"What did he do?"
Claire was shaking. Tears cut white tracks into the soot on her face.
"He promised he wouldn't hurt you. He promised."
Lydia shook her head. She couldn't do this now. It didn't matter. None of it mattered.
"I'm going to kill him."
Claire's bare feet pounded into the ground as she stalked around to the back of the house. Lydia followed, holding her useless left arm as still as she could. Every step sent her collarbone clashing against the base of her throat. Her joints had filled with gravel dust. Rain had turned the soot on her skin into a wet, black ash. Claire was just ahead of her. She had a revolver stuffed down the back of her jeans. Lydia recognized the gun, but not the fluid way Claire pulled the weapon, cocked the hammer, and trained the sights at the man crawling on the ground. Paul had pulled himself about 20 feet away from the house. A streak of dark blood showed his progress through the wet grass. His right knee was a bloody pulp. His ankle was shattered. The bottom half of his leg hung at an unnatural angle. Bone and sinew and muscle glistened in the light from the still roaring flames. Claire had the gun pointed at Paul's face.
"You fucking liar!"
Paul kept moving, using his elbow and hand to pull himself away from the fire. Claire tracked him with the gun.
"You said you didn't hurt her."
Paul shook his head, but he kept crawling.
"You promised me."
He finally looked up.
"You promised,"
Claire said, sounding petulant and devastated and furious. Paul managed a shrug.
"At least I didn't fuck her."
Claire pulled the trigger. Lydia screamed. The noise from the gun was deafening. The bullet had torn open the side of Paul's neck. His hand clamped down on the wound. He fell onto his back. Blood seeped between his fingers.
"Jesus Christ,"
Lydia breathed. It was all she could say.
"Jesus Christ."
"Claire."
Paul's voice gurgled in his throat.
"Call an ambulance."
Claire trained the gun at his head. She looked down at him with an utter lack of emotion.
"You lying piece of shit."
"No,"
Lydia grabbed Claire's hand just as she pulled the trigger. The shot went wild. She could feel the recoil travel through Claire's hand and up her own arm. Claire tried to aim the gun again. No. Lydia forced her hand away. Look at me. Claire wouldn't let go of the gun. Her eyes were glazed. She was somewhere else. Somewhere dark and menacing, where the only way out of it was to murder her husband. Look at me, Lydia repeated. He knows where Julia is. Claire wouldn't look away from Paul. Claire. Lydia spoke as clearly as she could. Paul knows where Julia is. Claire shook her head. He told me, Lydia said. He told me in the garage. He knows where she is. She's close by. He told me he still visits her. Claire shook her head. He's lying. Paul said, I'm not lying. I know where she is. Claire tried to move the gun back to his head, but Lydia stopped her. Let me try, okay? Just let me try, please. Please. Slowly, Claire slackened the tension in her arm as she gave in. Still, Lydia kept an eye on her sister as she struggled to kneel down. The pain nearly took her breath away. Every movement sent a sharp knife into her shoulder. She wiped the sweat from her brow. She looked down at Paul. Where is Julia? Paul wouldn't look at her. He was only interested in Claire. Please, he begged her. Call an ambulance. Claire shook her head. Lydia said, Tell us where Julia is, and we'll call an ambulance. Paul squinted up at Claire. The rain was pelting his face, spraying his face, streaming into his face. Call an ambulance, Paul repeated. Please. Please. How many times had Lydia begged him in the garage? How many times had he laughed at her? Paul said, Claire. Where is she? Lydia repeated. You said she was close. Is she in Watkinsville? Is she in Athens? He said, Claire, please, you have to help me. This is serious. Claire held the gun limply at her side. She was looking back at the house, staring into the fire. Her lips were in a tight line. Her eyes were still wild. She was going to crack. Lydia just couldn't tell which way. She looked back down at Paul. Tell me. She tried to keep the begging tone out of her voice. You said you know where she is. You said you visited her. Rotten bones with long strands of dirty blonde hair and those stupid bracelets. Claire. Paul was losing too much blood. His skin had turned a waxy white. Claire, please. Just look at me. Lydia didn't have time for this. She jammed her fingers into his shattered knee. Paul's screams pierced the air. She didn't let up. She kept pressing until her fingernails had scraped raw bone. She said, Tell us where Julia is. He hissed air between his teeth. Tell us where she is! Paul's eyes rolled back in his head. His body started to convulse. Lydia took away her hand. He gasped for air. Bile and pink blood dribbled out of his mouth. He pressed the back of his head into the ground. His chest was heaving for air. He made a choking sound. He was crying. No,
He wasn't crying. He was laughing. You don't have it in you.
Paul's bloody white teeth showed between wet lips.
Worthless fat bitch.
Lydia jammed her fingers into his knee again. She could feel her knuckles bend as they curled around the broken shards of bone. This time, Paul screamed so loud that his voice broke. His mouth was open, air was passing through his vocal cords, but there was no sound. His heart would be shaking. His bladder would be releasing. His bowels would be liquid. His soul would be dying. Lydia knew, because Paul had made her scream the same way inside the garage. He started to convulse again. His arms were stiff. His grip tightened around the wound in his neck. She saw dark red blood dripping between his fingers. Claire said, I have a first aid kit in the car. We could patch up his neck and make this last longer. Her tone was conversational, almost the same as Paul's had been inside the garage. Or we could burn him alive. There's some gas left in the can. Lydia knew that her sister was deadly serious. Claire had already shot him twice. She would have executed him if Lydia hadn't stopped her. Now she wanted to torture him, to burn him alive. What was Lydia doing? She looked down at her hand. The fingers had all but disappeared inside what was left of Paul's knee. She could feel his tremors resonating straight into her heart, into her soul. She forced herself to withdraw her hand. Taking away his pain was one of the hardest things she had ever done. But no matter what hell Paul Scott had visited on Lydia and her family, she wasn't going to turn into Paul. And she sure as hell wasn't going to let her baby sister. Where is she, Paul? Lydia tried to appeal to what little humanity Paul had left. You're going to die. You know that. It's just a matter of time. Tell us where Julia is. Do one decent thing before you go. A thread of blood slipped from Paul's mouth. He told Claire, I really did love you. Lydia asked, Where is she? Paul would not look away from Claire. You were the only good thing I ever did. Claire tapped the muzzle of the gun against her leg. He said, Look at me. Please, just one more time. She shook her head. She stared out at the field behind the house. He said, You know that I love you. You were the only part of me that was normal. Claire shook her head again. She was crying. Even in the rain, Lydia could see the tears streaming down her face. I was never going to leave you. Paul was crying, too. I love you. I promise, Claire. I love you with my dying breath. Claire finally looked down at her husband. Her mouth opened, but only to take in air. Her eyes tracked back and forth like she couldn't quite understand what was in front of her. Was she seeing the old Paul in this moment? The insecure grad student who so desperately wanted her to love him? Or was she seeing the man who had filmed those movies? The man who, for 24 years, had kept the dark secret that had haunted her family? Paul reached up to Claire. Please. I'm dying. Just give me this. Please. She shook her head. But Lydia could tell her resolve was breaking. So could Paul. He said,
"Please."
Slowly, reluctantly, Claire knelt down beside him. She let the gun fall to the grass. She placed her hand over his. She was helping him staunch the wound, helping him stay alive. Paul coughed, blood spit between his lips. He tightened his grip on his wounded neck.
"I love you. No matter what, always know that I love you."
Claire held back a sob. She stroked his cheek. She brushed the hair out of his eyes. She gave him a sad smile and said,
"You stupid asshole. I know you put Julia in the well."
Lydia would have missed Paul's shocked look if she hadn't been watching his face. He quickly rearranged his expression into one of open delight.
"My God, you were always so clever." "I was, wasn't I?"
Claire was still leaning over him. Lydia thought she was going to kiss him, but instead, Claire peeled his hand away from his wounded neck. Paul struggled to resist, to stop the flow of blood, but Claire held tight to his hand. She pushed him onto his back. His strength was gone. He couldn't stop the blood. He couldn't stop Claire. She straddled his waist. She pinned down both of his wrists. She kept looking him in the eye, drinking in every change that crossed his face, the disbelief, the fear, the desperation. His heart was frantically pounding. Every beat sent out a fresh spray of arterial blood. Claire did not look away when his mouth gaped open, or when the rain thumped the back of his throat. She held his gaze as the spray from his neck turned into a steady flow, as his hands unclenched, as his muscles relaxed, as his body slackened. Even when the only indication that Paul was still alive was the heavy wheeze of his breaths and the pink bubbles between his lips, Claire did not look away.
"I see you," she told him. "I see exactly who you are." Lydia was dumbstruck. She couldn't believe what was happening right in front of her. What she had allowed her sister to do. They couldn't come back from this. There was no way Claire would ever come back from this.
"Come on." Claire was talking to Lydia. She stood up. She wiped her bloody hands on her pants like she'd just come in from the garden. Lydia still couldn't move. She looked at Paul. The bubbles had stopped. She could see the flames from the house reflecting in the glassy black of his irises. A drop of rain hit his eyeball. He didn't blink. "Liddy?" Lydia turned away. Claire was in the backyard. The rain was really coming down now. Claire didn't seem to notice. She was kicking at the grass, pushing her way through the overgrowth.
"Come on," Claire called. "Help me."
Somehow, Lydia managed to leverage herself up. She was still in shock. That was the only reason the pain didn't stop her. She forced herself to put one foot in front of the other. She made herself ask Claire,
"What are you doing?"
"There's a well!"
Claire had to raise her voice to be heard over the rain. She was kicking at the weeds with her bare feet, making wide circles on the ground.
"The property taxes said the house was on city water."
Her excitement was barely contained. She had the same breathlessness as when she used to tell Lydia a story about the mean girls at school. "I did a painting for Paul. Years ago, it was from a photograph of the backyard. He showed it to me when we were first dating, and he said he loved the view because it reminded him of home and his parents and growing up at the farm, and there was a barn in the picture, Liddy. A big, scary barn, and right beside it was a well with a roof over it. I spent hours trying to get the color right. Days, weeks. I can't believe I forgot about that fucking well." Lydia pushed away some tall weeds. She wanted to believe her. She longed to believe her. Could it be that simple? Could Julia really be here? "I know I'm right." Claire kicked at the ground under the swing set. "Paul kept everything the same in the house, everything. So why would he tear down the barn except to hide the evidence? And why would he cover the well if there wasn't something in it? You saw his expression when I said that about the well. She has to be here, Pepper. Julia has to be in the well."
They were all so close, Lydia. You want me to tell you how close?
Lydia started kicking through the wet weeds. The wind had changed direction again. She couldn't imagine a time when she would smell anything but smoke. She looked back at the house. The fire was still going strong, but maybe the rain would keep it from jumping into the grass.
"Liddy!"
Claire was standing under the swing set. She banged the ground with her heel. A hollow sound echoed up from deep in the earth. Claire dropped to her knees. She started digging her fingers into the earth. Lydia dropped down beside her. She used her good hand to feel what her sister had found. The wooden cover was heavy, about an inch thick and 3 feet round.
"This has to be it," Claire said.
"It has to be it." Lydia grabbed handfuls of dirt. Her hand was bleeding. There were blisters from the fire, from the melting foam. Still, she kept digging. Claire finally moved enough dirt to wedge her fingers underneath the cover. She squatted down like a weightlifter and pulled so hard that the muscles on her neck stood out. Nothing.
"Damn it."
Claire tried again. Her arms shook from the effort. Lydia tried to help, but she couldn't make her arm move in that direction. The rain was doing them no favors. Everything felt heavier. Claire's fingers slipped. She fell backward into the grass.
"Shit!"
she screamed, pushing herself back up. "Try pushing it." Lydia braced her feet against the cover. Claire helped, using the heels of her hands, putting her back into it. Lydia felt herself slipping. She dug in the heel of her good hand and pushed so hard that she felt like her legs were going to break in two. Finally, eventually, they managed to move the heavy piece of wood a few inches.
"Harder,"
Claire said. Lydia didn't know how much harder she could push. They tried again, this time with Claire beside her using her feet. The cover moved another inch, then a few more. They both pushed, screaming out in pain and the effort until the cover had moved enough so that their legs were dangling over open earth. Dirt and rocks fell into the mouth of the well. Rain splattered against water. They both looked down into the endless darkness.
"Damn it!"
Claire's voice echoed back up.
"How deep do you think it is?"
"We need a flashlight."
"There's one in the car."
Lydia watched her sister sprint away in her bare feet. Her elbows were bent. She hurtled over a fallen tree. She was so intent on moving forward that she wasn't stopping to look back at what she had left in her wake. Paul. She hadn't just watched him die. She had taken in his death like a hummingbird drawing nectar. Maybe that didn't matter. Maybe watching Paul die was the sustenance that Claire needed. Maybe Lydia shouldn't worry about what they had done to Paul. She should be more concerned about what